The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and it's Friday. Welcome to it. The weekend is just about upon us. And that's a good thing, because we need a weekend to regroup and rejuvenate and you know, all that stuff. So, if you've been paying attention over the past few days, it seems like this country is going further and further off the rails into, you know, batshit crazy territory. I'm looking for, I think this is the one, you know, as you know, I live in South Florida, where we have this crazy governor who this week signed this very restrictive voter suppression legislation into law. He did it by excluding most of the media. Not that it was that big of an event that everyone had to rush out to cover it, but a local CBS channel was supposed to provide the pool footage for anybody else, any other network or channel nationally who wants it. That's how it works. They have a pool system so that not every outlet has to be at every event. And the DeSantis people wouldn't let them in. They said, nope, we're exclusively on Fox. Fox? The not news channel? The fake news channel? Yeah. And apparently that was a last minute decision from moron death sentence himself. Because the way he became governor of Florida was by getting Donald Trump's attention by going on Fox all the time. And I think somebody once like tried to figure out how the worth of the media, the free media that he got. And it's just it's crazy. Our media is broken. And if you didn't hear the show earlier this week with Tim Carr, I think he was on Wednesday of freepress.net. You definitely should check it out. Hold on, I want to find, did I put it in there? Where did I do it? No, oh no. All right, so maybe it's in this folder. So today, coming up on the show, Stephanie Kelton is making a return appearance. Now, Stephanie Kelton has been on the show a number of times. And I got to say, I am such a big fan of hers. And it's weird that I say that because she's an economist. She's a professor. I wish I had a professor like her back when I was in college, because then perhaps I wouldn't be so, afraid of economics, right? When the subject of modern monetary theory comes up, I'd say, oh, I got that. Well, actually, I kind of do now because, I'm looking for the book. It's all the way on the other side of the room. Because I read The Deficit Myth, a book that you should definitely read that's now out in paperback. Stephanie Kelton is a professor of economics at Stony Brook University in New York. She's been an advisor to Bernie Sanders and the Senate Budget Committee. And, well, you'll hear. She's still advising some people. And for good reason, she speaks sense. Not as in dollars and cents, but common sense. So anyway, we'll hear Stephanie Kelton in just a little while. But I got to tell you, I'm so grateful for her coming on this show so often, and I know that she's a big dog person. Oh, thank you. So David brought over the book so I can hold it up for you. It's now out in paperback, by the way. This is the hardcover edition. Anyway, it's nice having a quasi-producer in the other room. So Stephanie was not available today. We actually wound up taping this interview on Wednesday. So what I started saying, though, is she's a dog lover. Stephanie has nothing on Facebook stream yet. Really? Hold on. Why is Facebook not going? Facebook is going. Oh, you might be looking at the wrong place, because I think I did it a little differently. But if you go to facebook.com/TheNicoleSandlerShow and on the live page there, or go to my Facebook page, it's streaming there. We are definitely on Facebook. But you might have to look for it. But we are on Facebook. Sorry about that. Robert Hill, New York City. Yeah, just look. Go to my personal Facebook page, N. Sandler. It should be there. Or it should be on the Nicole Sandler Show page, too. I don't know. Anyway, it's there. We are firing on all cylinders. Anyway, back to Stephanie Kelton. So she has a dog. She has a beautiful Samoyed named Ozzy that she posts pictures of all the time, you know, on Twitter. And so, oh, you were following the link next to the Listen Live page and it's not showing up there. I need to fix that. I did it a little differently today. So figures, best laid plans and all that stuff. Anyway, go to Twitch. Twitch is working really well. So I keep getting off subject. Anyway, so Stephanie Kelton, I know she loves this dog and it's a beautiful dog. And I thought I was in between commissions and I thought, well, you know, as a way of saying thank you to Stephanie for coming on my show, let me paint a picture, a portrait of Ozzy. So because we taped this, and again, when I got her on the line, I had the video rolling. This part didn't make it into the regular interview, but I thought I'd share with you her reaction just because it was so great. So I'm getting the video all set up, right? And I bring her on and I'm about to start recording when she says, you know, I can't see you, right? And what I did was I put, you see, I have paintings behind me in the studio hanging on the wall. So I put the painting of Ozzy on the wall behind me thinking she would just notice it, which is kind of what happened. So so here's that.
You know that I can't see you, right?
Oh, you can't. Oh, shoot. Hold on. Oh, okay. Let me fix that right now because there's actually something you want to see here.
What? I know.
This one.
Oh, my God.
Can you see it?
I do.
Let me zoom in on it for you. Hold on. I'm going to zoom in. I was wondering if you'd see it.
He's majestic.
Oh, my God. First of all, he's beautiful. He is just beautiful. Let me. Wrong way. Wrong zoom.
Close. I want you to see him. Wrong way.
I should have edited this. Sorry.
There we go.
I did a bad edit. There he is.
Look at him.
That is Ozzy.
My prince.
He really is. He's just.
That is amazing.
Oh, good. I love
him. Oh, my God.
So I need you to send me your address, and I can mail him out tomorrow. Okay, and then I'm going to bring it down and go a little further in where I bring him up to the camera.
That's just. I mean, it's just amazing. It looks fluffy. He looks like you could touch him and feel his fur.
Yeah. So anyway, needless to say, Ozzy is on his way to Stephanie Kelton, her home in New York on Long Island. And I'm available to paint your dog. Now, Mother's Day is this Sunday. So, you know, if you didn't already have me do one, you've kind of missed the boat. But Father's Day is coming up and they make wonderful gifts, you know, for yourself too, because we all love our fur puppies, fur babies. Anyway, so there's that. I love getting that kind of reaction, as you can tell. Anyway, in just a little while, we will check back in with Stephanie Kelton and have her explain to us what you say to people who go, but Joe Biden is talking about spending so much money. We owe China our lives and our grandchildren. We're putting them in debt. She'll disavow you of all of that. But, you know, I sit here day after day and I kind of bitch and moan about the idiot in Tallahassee who is the governor of Florida and who is now the it blows my mind to even say the front runner for anyone who if Donald Trump does not run for president in 2024, apparently a moron death sentence is the front runner. So, you know, I want you to know that not all of Florida is as batshit crazy as the death sentence supporters, as the Trump supporters. So this was the Miami Herald. I think this was Wednesday's paper, and I just happened to pick it up, and I'm looking at the letters to the editor, and it's one after another after another. About death sentence. Let me share a few of them with you because they're so good. So here's one from John Weiner in Coral Gables, Florida. Suddenly, Governor DeSantis believes in pandemic science. A year ago, he berated journalists who questioned whether Florida would become the next Italy. Now we know that the percentage of Floridians who contracted COVID-19 and the state's peak 7-day average case rate exceed comparable figures for Italy. With just 30% of Florida fully vaccinated, DeSantis has declared victory over the pandemic and precluded local governments from taking steps to reduce infection rates. Such wisdom has so far resulted in one death for every 610 Floridians due to COVID-19. The next one says is from Jim Richards, also of Coral Gables. We got a lot of Coral Gables letters in here today. Okay, this one says Governor DeSantis is obviously a well-educated man, but education does not necessarily translate into common sense. He is preoccupied with matters such as transgender athletes, restricting voter eligibility, and discouraging the proven methods of combating COVID-19. So where does he stand on Florida's existential problems such as rising sea levels? Not much is heard about that, nor about preserving the Everglades or improving quality of life, drinking water, pollution of our air and water resources, among others. The next one, I'm telling you, it's one after another, just like this. The next one, the headline that the Herald writers come up with is Despot Rules. This one says, so our emperor, and this is from Homestead, somebody in Homestead, another section of Miami. So our emperor, Governor DeSantis, has overruled home rule. Who knew a revered and carefully designed policy of many years would suddenly disappear by fiat? Republicans' love affair with strongman leadership has given birth to another wannabe dictator. City and county mayors may complain, but they are all according to his latest wish. Am I the only one who feels a growing trepidation? No, you're not. And it goes like that. But I want to share one more with you. And the highlight, the headline on this one reads, Forget Florida. And this is, although it's the Miami Herald, this is a letter from Barry Goldman Hall of San Jose, California. And this letter reads, in light of Governor Ron DeSantis's decision to void all COVID-19 restrictions, my family will cancel our pre-COVID-19 plans to visit the Sunshine State. We will not take my 8-year-old granddaughter to Disney World. We will keep our tourist dollars, vaccination cards, and common sense out here on the Pacific Coast. And it goes like that. So I know you're asking, as I am, why? What? Where's his popularity coming from? And today, apparently, his buddy Matt Gaetz and a Marjorie Taylor nutjob Greene are in the Villages. For what reason? What reason? Matt Gaetz district is not in Ocala, Florida. It's in the Panhandle. It's way far up north. It's like Alabama Minor. What the hell's he doing there? And Marjorie Taylor Greene, go back to Georgia. Get the fuck out of my state. By the way, a quick heads up to the person who sent me a letter, an email last night, Nicole at NicoleSandler.com. I read them all, answer most, who said, I'm wondering why, and I'm paraphrasing because I didn't pull the email, but I just thought of it as I used the F word, as I tend to do occasionally. And she said, I'm only a little bit older than you. I'm wondering why, with all your uses for the F word, why you've never used the term mind fucking. And you know what? She's right. I don't know why. I don't know why, but I've talked about gaslighting a lot. And mind fucking is the same thing as gaslighting. That's what they do. So thank you for the suggestion. I'll pull that one out, I'm sure, going on. Yeah. Okay. One other thing that I want to share with you before we get to Stephanie Kelton, and then we'll get to her in just a moment. You know, I'm looking at yesterday. I see the news and there's Lindsey Graham. Now, I try not to pay much attention to Lindsey Graham, but sometimes I can't help it because, you know, he's there. Yeah, he's there. So, but yesterday I thought what he said was very odd, and it was in regards to Liz Cheney. And that's right, Lady G, and Lindsey Graham's complaints about her, and he said this, Oh, it would help if I turned this up. He said this.
I would just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no.
What?
I've always liked Liz Cheney, but she's made a determination that the Republican Party can't grow with President Trump. I've determined we can't grow without him.
Really?
All of these people, like Herschel Walker and all the people you just named, are attracted to the Trump Republican Party. Economic populism, America First agenda. If you don't get that as a Republican, you're making the biggest mistake in the history of the Republican Party. The reason our party is growing with minorities and with working men and women is because President Trump appears to be on the side of people working really hard.
Are you kidding me?
Appears to be on the side of opportunity, not dependency, because he is. So I just want to tell everybody, if you want to help take back this seat in Georgia, stand up to corporate America. Let's make up the money the Georgia Republican Party lost. I'm in for $75,000. Help me get the other $75,000 to the Georgia Republican Party, lindseygraham.com. We're not going to be held hostage
by
these people.
Enough. Sorry, I didn't mean to let that play that long, but I was looking for something. Because, again, he said the Republican Party can't survive without Donald Trump, can't move forward without Donald Trump. Seriously? Where the hell did that come from? So, hold on. Why won't this open? So I'm looking for
Trump and
okay, there it is. So I remembered back to the night of January 6th. You remember that, right? January 6th, after the insurrection at the Capitol, Lindsey Graham, obviously, wherever he was hiding out, got a hold of a bottle of something because he obviously imbibed before he went back to the Capitol once they cleared the building of the insurrectionists, right? And he decided to take to the floor and make a speech, make some pronouncements. And, well, let me share with you some of what Lindsey Graham said. And yeah, I edited it, so it's not quite so long. But remember, this is what he said yesterday. I won't play the whole thing again, I promise.
I would just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no.
No.
I've always liked Liz Cheney, but she's made a determination that the Republican Party can't grow with President Trump. I've determined we can't grow without him.
Okay, so that's Lindsey Graham today, right? But and think about Kevin McCarthy, too, who also, after the insurrection, got up on the floor of the House and said Donald Trump is responsible. Lindsey Graham, on the night of January 6th, I thought, finally, this is what it takes. An angry mob trying to overthrow the government inside the Capitol building. And to refresh your memory, here's an abridged version of what Miss G, Lady G, had to say.
Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. I hate it being this way.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I hate it.
Yeah.
From my point of view, he's been a consequential president.
Okay.
But today, first thing you'll see, all I can say is count me out. Enough is enough. I've tried to be helpful.
Count me out.
But
enough
when
is enough.
Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled 4-3 that they didn't violate the Constitution of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I agree with the 3, but I accept the 4. If Al Gore can accept 5-4, he's not president. I can accept Wisconsin 4-3.
Hello.
Pennsylvania.
How difficult
it went
is
to
that?
To the Second Circuit.
Yeah.
So much for all the judges being in Trump's pocket.
Yeah.
They said, no, you're wrong. I accept the Pennsylvania Second Circuit that Trump's lawsuit wasn't right. Georgia,
he
they said the Secretary of State took the law in his own hands. He changed the election laws unlawfully.
No, he didn't.
The federal judge said no.
No.
I accept the federal
you
judge.
You accept the federal judge. That's right.
Fraud. They
there
said there's
no
66,000 people in Georgia under 18 voted.
Where?
How many people believe that?
Nobody.
I asked, give me 10. Haven't had one. They said 8,000 felons in prison in Arizona voted. Give me 10. Hadn't gotten one.
Uh-huh.
Does that say there's problems in every election?
No.
I don't buy this. Enough's enough.
Enough's enough.
There are people dying to my good friend from Illinois to make sure we have a chance to argue among ourselves. And when it's over, it is over. It is over.
It is over, he said.
The final thing, Joe Biden. I've traveled the world with Joe.
He said it's over.
I hoped he lost. I prayed he would lose. He won.
He won.
He's the legitimate president of the United States.
There he goes.
I cannot convince people, certain groups, by my words, but I will tell you by my actions, that maybe I, among any, above all others in this body, need to say this. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are lawfully elected and will become the president and the vice president of the United States on January the 20th.
That was Lindsey Graham on the night of January 6th. So what happened? Yes, I know he was drunk. Had to have been. I'm done. I've had enough. I'm out. It can't end like this, but it's over. And now we get this.
On the corporate tax rate, have you talked to CEOs about that? And have you?
Yes.
Have you? Are you open to say 25%?
I'm open to
what's? Oh
yes.
Shit! That's the wrong one. Lindsey Graham said that's a different one.
I would just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward?
All right, you heard it. I'm sorry, you don't need to hear it again. He said we can't move forward without Trump. What does he have on you, Lindsey? What, you know, there was that male prostitute who was trying to out you and nobody else would come forth. We already know. Don't be held up by blackmailers saying they're going to out the fact that you're, you know, gay. So what? Big fucking deal. It's 2021. Get over yourself. But to let this shit go on because you're afraid people are going to find out you're a closet queen? Give it a rest. Oh, my God. All right. Now for the other thing that I just played. Joe Biden. So you'll hear in just a moment, we're going to listen to the interview I just did with Stephanie Kelton. We recorded it day before yesterday because she's busy. So we had some time and we taped it. And I asked her about Joe Biden and the job he's doing. And you'll hear her answer. I'm not even going to paraphrase it. You'll hear it. But, you know, it was along the lines of what I've been saying. Surprisingly happy, you know, surprised in a good way at what he's doing. All right. So there's that. Yesterday, Joe Biden went to Lake Charles, Louisiana, ruby red Lake Charles, Louisiana, to promote the infrastructure deal, which he calls the American Jobs Plan, because they go neck and neck. Because in order to do the infrastructure, in order to replace the bridges and the broken roads and everything else, the people need to be hired to do those jobs. It's a big jobs program. And by the way, in terms of the employment numbers, the April numbers coming out today, which I guess I should have led with that, they were much lower than what was expected. The government expected to announce 1 million new jobs created in the month of April. And what did they come up with? Something along the lines of like 200 and some odd thousand. Yeah. Well, the reason behind that, and oh my God, I put the wrong thing on here. All right, I don't have the figures in front of me. Because the plans are there to stimulate the job market, but they haven't passed yet, and that's the problem. In order to get those jobs created in the numbers we need, Congress has to pass the package, the American Jobs Plan that the Biden administration has put forth. All right, quickly to the phones. 416 area code. Who's this?
Nicole Sandler, Sean from Toronto, Canada, my sweetheart. How are you?
I'm well, Sean. How are you doing? You sound Irish, not Canadian. What?
I sound Irish.
You sound
I'm Jamaican. Well, I was born in Jamaica. I lived in Toronto, Canada for 30 years now. So.
Oh, gotcha. It's just an odd. I hear a little Canadian in the soul. So, okay.
Yes. Okay. So, I remember I called a couple of months ago and I was telling you that we were getting $1,800 a month. You remember me, right?
I do remember.
Oh, perfect. You know, Nicole, I used to hate your fucking guts, eh? Because you were too tough on President Obama. But guess what? I'm in love with your show. I love you. I listen to you every fucking day. You
awesome.
Redeemed yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so fucking much.
Okay, you know, I don't think... I think he should stay and fight that motherfucker, kick his ass out whenever you guys get the chance to, and spit in his face. You know, it's ridiculous.
You're talking about Ron death sentence? I should stay in Florida and spit in his face? If I spit in his face, I'll be charged with assault. That's one thing you don't do.
No, what I'm saying is... No, what I'm saying is, when is your election to replace that fucker?
November 2022.
So you're saying that you guys can't you can't get him out because he's that fucking powerful? You can't get him out?
No, because we don't have another election. He's up for election on November of 2022. We have our elections for governor every 4 years. That's when he's up.
So you'd have to get a good Democrat to kick his ass,
yeah,
right?
That's the problem here in Florida.
What I don't understand, the reason why I actually called today, Nicole, I was listening to my favorite girl, Randy. Oh. I don't understand why does white poor American people vote Republican? Nobody can ever answer my question. I'm asking you.
I cannot.
Why do white poor people vote Republican?
Because they're uneducated. And these poor people are led around by their nose like lemmings. And it's why, you know, Trump said, I'm looking to see if I have the clip here somewhere. I don't. But he, you know, and he famously said, I love the poorly educated. That's why low information voters who are lied to by Fox. That's why they believe the bullshit they're being fed by the Fox Not News Network.
Nicole,
yes.
I got a grade 11 education. Okay, I didn't go to college.
Okay.
I don't watch. I have Fox News. I listen to the conservative here in Canada.
Okay.
I listen to the NDP and I listen to the Liberals. And what's best for me? That's who I vote for.
Right.
I mean, I would never vote for the conservative because they're a racist party. Also, but our conservative. Is you're a liberal.
Yeah.
That's how bad your politics are. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
I know. So,
I
live in Canada, and I'm more passionate about American politics than a lot of your people, especially those old. I feel so for those old white folks. They're voting against your best interest.
Yes.
I don't understand. I have free health care.
My wife
went to the hospital to have a surgery. The only thing we paid was for the parking ticket. It was $15. And she would be for 4 hours. Like, give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
What's wrong with fucking Americans?
I don't understand,
Nicole.
You and me both. I don't either. I hear you.
You know, Nicole, move to Toronto, Canada. I have a big fucking house with 6 bedrooms. I'll give you my whole fucking basement.
Wow.
You can live in my basement.
I'd come, but I have a husband who's allergic to the cold. It's too cold for him.
Oh, fuck, man. It gets like below 30 here.
tell me about it. It gets even colder than that, and that's the problem. All right, I got to run because I got the Stephanie Kelton thing coming up.
I love your show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh, that what a great call. I appreciate that. Yes, Republicans and poor, poverty-stricken Americans do tend to vote against their own best interests. I don't know why. It's because... they are poorly educated, I guess. It's because they don't understand how to read and make an informed decision. Instead, they're led around by their noses by the likes of the Fox fake news network, and they believe everything they're force-fed. I don't know, but what a great call that was. Anyway, I want to get this in before I hit the Stephanie Kelton interview. So Joe Biden is in Lake Charles, and he's, in fact, the Republican mayor of Lake Charles said, hell, I'll listen to anybody, Republican, Democrat. He said something else. I don't know. Martian, something. It doesn't matter. As long as they want to repair this bridge that's 70 years old, that's 30 years past its due date. And Joe Biden said this in Lake Charles yesterday.
I'm willing to hear ideas from both sides. I'm meeting with my Republican friends up in the Congress to see, number one, how much they're willing to go for, what they think of the priorities, and what compromises mean. Man, I'm ready to compromise. What I'm not ready to do, I'm not ready to do nothing. I'm not ready to have another period where America has another infrastructure month and doesn't change a damn thing. America is more competitive, better, and more capable than any nation in the world. There's not a damn thing we cannot
do.
All
right, so there's Joe. I'll take you out behind the school and I'll beat your ass. Don't tell me we can't do it. All right, Joe Biden. So, but he's saying one thing that cannot happen is inaction. One thing that cannot happen is nothing. But then yesterday afternoon, maybe it was Wednesday afternoon, this happened. And I'll tell you something. After this was a few hours after Stephanie and I taped the interview that you'll hear in just a couple of minutes. And she sent me a message. She sent me this clip in a private message on Twitter that says, "I take back my answer on the question about how I assessed the first 100 days." And this is the clip she sent me.
On the corporate tax rate, have you talked to CEOs about that? And have you?
Yes.
Are you open to say 25%?
I'm open to compromising, yes. It doesn't have to be exactly what I say, but to suggest that, which some of the folks are suggesting, and I'm going to meet with Republicans next week when they come back.
Okay.
And
but
seriously meet with them. I'm willing to compromise.
Yeah.
But I'm not willing to not pay for what we're talking about.
Okay.
I'm not willing to deficit spend.
No! He said, "I'm not willing to deficit spend." He missed the whole point. Joe Biden, listen, please, to Stephanie Kelton. She understands how it works, and she's happy to explain it to you. The name of her book is The Deficit Myth, for good reason. Oh, man. Line with us right now is Stephanie Kelton. She is an economist, a professor of economics and public policy at Stony Brook University in New York, and author of The Deficit Myth, which is now available as a paperback. So I have the paperback cover up on the screen there because it looks different than the hardcover, but it's the same book. Anything new in the paperback?
Yeah, I wrote a new introduction to kind of situate the book in the COVID and with luck post-COVID moment. So paperback came out in March of this year. The hardback came out in June of last year. So just as COVID was really ravaging much of the world. And so here we are. So I did write an updated introduction.
Great. And it was never more important, I think, than it is right now as we're having these discussions and maybe disagreements over the money that Joe Biden wants to spend to get our country back on track. So, Stephanie Kelton, first thing I have to ask you is your thoughts on the Biden presidency 100 and a few days in.
Well, I think like many, I'm sitting here wearing my Sanders Institute sweatshirt. It's very cozy. I had a long drive back from New York this morning. I came home and got cozy. I think like many progressives, I have been pleasantly surprised by much of what has come out of the administration. I will say, starting with the $1.9 trillion COVID rescue package, they did not lose their nerve. And remember that bill came on the heels of a $900 billion package that Democrats and Republicans passed together in December of last year. So here we were just 3 months later, kicking out a $1.9 trillion relief package, coming back in with added support from the federal government for unemployment compensation, a good extension there. Those $1,400 checks, we can talk about whether they should have been $2,000 checks, but there was a lot of good stuff. Finally, money for state and local governments. And so that was all encouraging. And then to have them come back, have President Biden come back on the heels of that package and ask for $4.1 trillion more. And there's a lot of good stuff in there as well. Now, again, progressives, myself included, will argue that there are shortcomings. There's not enough in the climate investment space. And we could, we could debate parts of the package for sure. But I think that, there are very, very good signs in what's been put forward. And then now we have to find out how much of it can actually pass.
Right. And there's more coming, too. And the thing is, what's so galling, but we expect expected it, basically, is during the last 4 years when the former guy was in office, they spent an inordinate amount of money. They spent a lot doing tax givebacks to the wealthiest among us, this big tax package that cost $2 trillion that normal people like me never saw any benefit from. And it put us, it increased the deficit, something that Republicans tend to always scream about when there's a Republican in the White House. I mean, when there's a Democrat in the White House. When there's a Republican in the White House, they seem to not care. Obviously, they didn't during the Trump years. Now they're screaming deficit again. this is hypocrisy at its finest, but it's typical for them. Why are they raising these red flags now?
Because they think it's a vulnerability for Democrats. And to some extent, it is. And, you know, it's got me very much on edge because I don't want to watch Democrats continue to play, you know, Charlie Brown to Lucien the football. And they are aware, many of them, that this is exactly what has happened to them over the course of decades. And so, you know, the deficit gets weaponized. And what Republicans are doing now is as hypocritical as it is predictable. Mm-hmm. Of course they were going to do this. And as you said, you know, when you have the reins of power, when you have the House, when you have the Senate, when you have the White House, and you can pass your agenda, Republicans are not bashful. They are not fearful. They do not care about the deficit in any real sense of the word. They do not care. They passed their agenda. They delivered on these huge tax breaks that, as you said, disproportionately benefited people at the very top. Corporations had a windfall. And people at the very top of the income distribution enjoyed a windfall. And this is the point that I think Democrats need to hammer home, and they don't do it enough. What Democrats need to do is to make it clear to the American people that every deficit is good for someone. Don't run away from this word deficit. All of this stuff that the administration is trying to do now, paying for the $4.1 trillion, offsetting all the spending with proposed tax increases, many of which will never happen. The votes simply are not there. But the rhetoric that Democrats are putting out there, including the president, is that this is fiscally responsible, because you see, the way we want to spend money now is in a way that won't increase the deficit. Now ask yourself, would Republicans play that game if they were, when they are in control? Do they say, we want to pass our agenda, but we really don't want to add to the deficit, so we're going to try to fully pay for everything? Of course they don't. Right. They take advantage. And when I say every deficit is good for someone, this is what I mean. The deficit is so widely misunderstood. It is just the difference between two numbers. That's what it is. Okay. It's the difference between how many dollars the government spends into the economy each year and how many dollars they subtract back out, mostly through taxation. So this thing we call a government deficit is just another way of saying that the government is adding more than it is subtracting. So if they add $100 and they only subtract 90, we label that a government deficit, but we forget to remember that if they put 100 in and only take 90 back out, somebody gets 10. So when I say every deficit is good for someone, I mean it. In financial terms, the other side of their deficit lies a financial surplus in some other part of the economy. The question is, for whom? Who's getting it? And for what? Are we using the deficit to make investments in critical infrastructure and R&D, fighting climate change, paying for education, doing those sorts of things? Or are we using the deficit simply to deliver a windfall to people in our economy and society who least need the help? Every deficit is good for someone.
Right. So I'm going to give you a question out of left field that's probably going to frustrate you, but it's what is out there. We're in debt to China, for God's sake. Why are we spending money when we're in debt to China? Are we in debt to China?
Well, look, China holds some U.S. government bonds. Japan holds some U.S. government bonds. Mm-hmm. The Canadians hold some, right? You might hold some if you've got a pension. Maybe some of your pension is invested in U.S. government securities. I don't like to think of these things as debt. I think it's the wrong word to use. And it's part of the problem that we have. You know, I keep saying to people that the U.S. does not have a fiscal crisis. We aren't facing a fiscal crisis. We don't have a deficit problem. We don't have a debt problem. What we have is a communications this problem, because we're using words like borrowing from China, going into debt, driving up the national debt to describe what's really quite benign in terms of the government's finances. There's nothing inherently rotten or dangerous about what is being done, but we use words like debt to describe these financial instruments, U.S. treasuries, which are really just interest-bearing U.S. dollars. So what's happening, what happens with China, right? China has people that work and produce things that they don't keep and enjoy themselves. They don't consume themselves. They put them in these containers. They load them up on a ship and they send them to other parts of the world. Many of those goods come into the U.S. We have access to the cheap imports that come from China and other parts of the world. There are costs and benefits associated with that, right? To the extent that we allow that to cause lead to offshoring and to hollow out communities and drive down wages, this is a problem. We have ways of dealing with that. But we have to recognize the benefits as well, right? Access to cheaper goods means the American consumer's dollar goes further. So we buy this stuff from China, we pay them in dollars. And then what China does is it trades in many of its dollars for an interest-bearing dollar called a U.S. Treasury. And we call that borrowing from China. And then we say we're in debt to China. How will we ever pay back China? What if China decides one day to turn off the borrowing spigot and no more dollars will come out and the U.S. won't be able to finance itself? And you go, wait a minute, the U.S. government's the issuer of the dollar. We don't have to go to China or anybody else to get our own currency. So there's no financing dependent. We're not dependent on China for financing of our own spending. We can always cover our own bills. We have our own currency. And to pay back China, what does it mean? It means we take the treasury back and we give them back non-interest bearing U.S. dollars.
Right.
That's all that's involved.
Right. And so this is simply another right-wing talking point to ratchet up fear, to make you feel, oh my God, we're saddling our kids with our debt to China.
Yeah, and it also plays into fear of the other, right? The foreign threat. It leans into some of that kind of often dangerous sort of rhetoric as well. It's a way to weaponize what, again, I said is quite a benign thing. It's a very safe financial instrument, the most important financial instrument in the global financial system, our U.S. treasuries. That's what it is, right? It's a safe asset. If you have some of them, they're part of your savings, they're part of your wealth.
Right. And U.S. Treasury bonds are those are some of the safest investments out there because it's got the power of the U.S. government behind them, right?
Yeah, it's a risk-free asset, which means you might then ask the follow-up question, hey, wait a minute, why is the U.S. government paying interest? Interest is a reward, right? There's supposed to be this risk-reward trade-off. You take risk, you get a reward. But the U.S. government is allowing people to hold a risk-free asset and then giving them interest on top of it. So what's really happening is that the federal government has chosen to provide a subsidy to bondholders. Interest is a subsidy to people who already have enough money to invest some of their dollars in U.S. treasuries. Risk-free, but you get a reward.
And so Republicans know this. They know what you're talking about, right? Is the stuff they're saying, the red flags they're putting up, we can't afford it, it's too expensive, we're going to saddle our kids with our debt, is that just their talking points to instill fear in the American people so the Democrats can't get their agenda through?
Well, I'm that might give them a little bit too much credit. I think that probably not that many on either side of the aisle, frankly, understand monetary operations and the mechanics of government finance. I think a lot of members of Congress actually do believe that we borrow from China and that there is a real risk of China one day waking up and saying, all done, no more lending to the United States, and that somehow that would create real hardship for us. And by the way, the Congressional Budget Office, which Congress relies on to evaluate legislation. They produce the budget outlook and tell Congress basically your fiscal finances are not so good and here's why. And in that narrative that the CBO puts out, they say things like, well, there's a risk that China and other foreign investors might lose their appetite for you. So lawmakers hear this, they say, wow, this is a real risk that we face. So I think some of them do believe it, but to be sure, sure Republicans, you know, grab onto these narratives and use them to beat back policies that they don't like. And they know that the American people don't know better, and that it will be a kind of an easy sell to raise these flags about, you know, China and all. Oh, and the other one, of course, is that it's a burden on future generations.
Of course.
Why would we abuse our children and grandchildren in this way? So they use that rhetoric. They've been using it for decades, if not hundreds of years. And there aren't enough people out there trying to correct it. And so there's so much misinformation. And, you know, you can persuade someone who's sort of on the fence maybe about more ambitious spending, and then you come in and you say, yeah, but what about China, and what about the grandkids,
right,
and what about, and then, you know, somebody says, oh yeah, I don't want to do that, right, that would be irresponsible and reckless, so I guess we'd have to deprive ourselves of better public services today in the name of protecting some, you know, imaginary future generation that's supposedly going to be harmed by these financial assets that they might one day inherit.
Right, and part of the problem is, Stephanie Kelton, it's not only the Republicans saying this stuff. So all we have to do is go back to the last Democratic administration, the Obama administration, and look at who he had as Treasury Secretary and all the economic advisors. Larry Summers comes out of the woodworks to criticize Joe Biden's spending. First of all, that's help we don't need. Second of all, who asked him? Right? I mean, right? They're doing more damage than good, isn't he?
Well, he potentially could have done quite a bit of damage. I think we got very lucky in that the economists in the White House shut that down pretty quickly. Mm. They just simply came out and said, we disagree with Larry, and here are the reasons why, and we're not going to let him, you know, shake our confidence in the ability of this package at this size to make real improvements in the economy. And what Larry came out this time and said, though, was really kind of different for him. He didn't lean into the deficit and debt rhetoric that he had leaned into in the past when the Republicans were trying to pass their tax cuts in 2017. Larry went on a big media blitz, you know, kind of same kind of thing, where he very publicly took a position against the tax cuts. But he argued that if the Republicans were successful in passing the tax cuts, these were his exact words, that the U.S. would be living on a shoestring for decades to come because of the increases in the deficit. He went on to say that if we had a military difficulty, he mentioned North Korea, if there was some sort of an event, we might not be able to defend ourselves militarily. If there was a next recession, a downturn, we wouldn't be able to respond with fiscal policy because the tax cuts would have eaten up all the money. And so, you know, Larry, obviously that was wrong because the Republicans did pass the tax cuts and coronavirus happened and Congress spun out multi-trillion-dollar package one after another, and we had all the fiscal firepower because the deficits of the past don't constrain the ability of some future Congress to spend. So Larry was wrong. But this time, when President Biden was pushing the $1.9 trillion COVID package, Larry didn't like it. And he didn't like the checks. He didn't like those $1,400 checks at all. He didn't like the increases in unemployment from the federal government's contribution, an extra $300 a week.
Wow.
He didn't like that. And maybe some other things. And he would have rather seen infrastructure than that package. And so he came out against it. But he said this time, he didn't say, I'm worried about the deficits per se. He said, I'm worried about overheating. And overheating is the way an economist says inflation. I'm worried it's too big. I'm worried that it's going to put too much money in people's hands, and they're going to turn around as the economy reopens, and everybody's going to rush out and try to spend that money into an economy that doesn't have the capacity to meet that higher demand by producing more output. And then you just outstrip supply, and you get an inflation problem. So that's what Larry's been kind of harping on about for the past weeks and months. And, you know, so far, I think, fortunately, most people in positions of power have tuned it all out. Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, said, listen, we might see some increases in prices in certain sectors. You know, maybe we'll see airline prices, car rental prices. Maybe it'll be harder to book a hotel. You know, we just don't know. Harder to get a table at a restaurant. We might see, and we probably will, some price increases. But he said, speaking for the Fed, he said, we expect them to be transitory, which means they'll happen and then they'll dissipate as the economy catches up, as supply catches up with demand. It's not going to become entrenched where we have this permanent increase, a spiral of prices, the kind that, you know, Larry's talking about, really problematic inflation. So we dodged a bullet, because normally he would have had an outsized voice. He's not in a cabinet position. Thank God. He's not in the administration. And so fortunately, the economists who are in the administration decided that Larry was off base here.
Now, didn't I read something in the last day or two about Janet Yellen kind of pulling back and putting up a warning sign where it wasn't called for?
Well, you probably did read something that suggested that she did that. And there are different interpretations of her initial remarks. So she spoke yesterday, I think, at the forum with the Atlantic, and she made some remarks about the possibility that the Fed might have to begin raising interest rates in the face of higher inflation, inflation moving higher. Financial markets got jittery.
Right.
Twittersphere went a little crazy. People started saying, what is she doing? You know, she's not the Fed chair anymore. She's at Treasury. You shouldn't be saying those things, mostly because they're unhelpful and probably also not correct by many people's readings, right? Uh-huh. That people really, many economists tend to believe that Powell has this right, that any increase in inflation will be transitory. The Fed has laid out a clear framework, and they're saying, we want to see unemployment fall. We want to see this economy recover, and we have no intention of raising rates for really quite some time, at least a year and a half, maybe 2 years. So when she said that, it did create, you know, some ripples. And then there was sort of a walk back later in the afternoon at a different forum. She clarified her statement, and she said it was not something that she either was recommending or anticipating.
Wow. Yeah. When you're at that level, I guess anytime you say something, it can have ramifications. So, Stephanie Kelton, about a month ago, you wrote an op-ed for the New York Times. The headline reads, Biden can go bigger and not pay for it the old way. And you were talking about that this is good. This kind of spending right now is needed. It's good. And they don't have to fall for the old pay for thing. In fact, they didn't bring it up while the Republicans were in power. It's only when the Democrats are in power. Mitch McConnell said something interesting the other day. He's like, well, you know, I'm willing to make a deal and do something on infrastructure, but not if it rescinds the 2017 tax cuts or whatever. Question from the peanut gallery, which is actually my husband. Can we rescind the MAGA tax scam and claw back the money? Is that something we can do? I mean, if they're so concerned about $2 trillion, well, there's $2 trillion that is not helping the average American. And again, the billionaires got plenty wealthier during this pandemic. Like, enough already. Give some of the money downstream.
Well, the answer to the question is pretty simple one, I think. And it is this. Congress can do just about anything if it has the votes. Now, the reality here is that they do not have the votes. Not only do you not have a single Republican in the Senate who will vote, and probably not one in the House either. Nobody's going to vote to repeal the entirety of the Trump tax cuts. That's a non-starter. Never mind that you don't have any Republican votes. You don't have the Democrats. You don't have 50 Democratic senators who would vote to repeal in its entirety. That's out. Absolutely clear that that's out. Because remember, part of what happened in that legislation is that the corporate income tax rate went from 35% to 21%.
Right.
So President Biden has proposed increasing it, not back up to 35%, but to 28%.
Right.
There are already a number of Democrats in the Senate who have come out and said, that's a no-go for me. I'm not going to 28. I'm working worried about, you know, U.S. competitiveness and this sort of thing. Maybe I'll go to 25. So hate to disappoint your husband, but
it's not gonna
the votes are, there are not nearly the votes. In fact, if anything, you've got Democrats pushing to restore SALT, right? So that's mm-hmm. that's a new tax cut that they want included in the legislation going forward.
Well,
so.
And let's explain what SALT is, because that hurt everyday people who don't have millions of dollars, you know, in the bank. This takes away their tax deduction for mortgage expenses and stuff, right? Do I have that right?
Well, it puts a cap on the amount that you can use to offset your taxable income, right? So the cap is $10,000. So if your state and local taxes, including your property tax, come in below that threshold,
you're going
to hurt you in absolute terms, right? We could talk about relative, who benefits in relative terms, but you're still getting your full, you're claiming your full deduction. But if you live in a blue state like I do, and you have very high property taxes like I do, this one hits you, and restoring it would help you. But you are absolutely correct to point out that the overwhelming majority of individuals who would benefit from restoration of the SALT deduction are people in the upper income categories. In other words, I saw a piece the other day, I think by... I don't want to get it wrong. I don't think it was Citizens for Tax Justice. I think it was Tax Policy Center. Mm-hmm. And I believe the bottom 80% of taxpayers will enjoy absolutely no benefit whatsoever from restoring SALT. So, and within that top 20%, most of the benefits go to the highest echelon of that top 20%.
Who may have gotten help from the tax cuts in the first place.
Oh, they surely would
right.
have. Yeah.
So this is just a double hit. It would help enrich them again, instead of giving relief to the people on the lower end of the income scale who desperately need it. And that's what they're fighting back against. So, Stephanie, for people like me who are certainly not economists, I mean, you break it down to a place where I can understand it. And I so appreciate that. And I recommend everybody read The Deficit Myth, because you put it into terms that we can grasp. But if I'm trying to talk to some Trumper who's like, they're going to raise my taxes and they're spending too much. And what is the elevator pitch that the average person can give to somebody to disavow them of this ridiculous notion, to say, no, this is what the government's there for. They can do this. And right now what's needed is stimulus. They need to get money to people who need the money right now.
Well, look, first, the president has essentially made a tax pledge, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a Grover Norquist tax pledge, but it is President Biden's tax pledge. And his pledge to the American people is that if you are in a household that is making less than $400,000 a year, you're not going to pay a penny more in federal tax.
Right.
So that is a promise, right? So if it depends who these Trumpers are that you're talking to, if they're high income earning Trumpers, they may have something to worry about. But the vast majority.
Those aren't the ones that I'm worried about. It's the low income, poorly educated people who don't know what they're talking about, and they watch Fox and
poorly educated people, many of whom struggle like well educated people, frankly, with childcare, finding affordable childcare.
Right,
that's in the legislation. Pre-K, making universal education for kids age 3 to 5, so kids get a leg up on kindergarten and they start further ahead. They go further in school. They're less likely to drop out, more likely to go to college, more likely to have higher lifetime earnings. I mean, all the benefits that come with that. There are all kinds of things in this legislation that will create jobs for and strengthen the safety net and provide some added benefits and securities for, you know, a cross section of ordinary people who struggle with paying for college, with paying for childcare, with elder care, and thinking about how do I go back to the workplace if my, you know, parent is sick, or I don't have affordable health care, and so I can't get a job because it costs me as much to put my child in daycare as I would earn if I were working. So it's essentially a wash. So I stay out of the workforce. And so there are just, you know, so many ways in which, I guess, you know, if we could sit people down and walk them through what's actually in the legislation instead of what they hear when they're listening to Fox News, right. I think, you know, people would have a very different reaction, because they'd find out, wait, you mean I don't pay more, but I get these things? That sounds like a pretty good deal.
Right. Well, it's definitely a good deal. If they could just get away from their worry about the word socialism, because they have a skewed impression of what that means. And maybe they can realize the benefits of some of the European countries that are democratic socialist nations give to their people. We could use a little bit more of that. And the 2 years of community college is a great start. Look, my kid didn't go to college. She hated school. She was not a good student. And I couldn't afford to put her through school. And the last thing I was going to do is demand that she go into debt to take classes that she didn't want to take in the first place. If there were 2 years of free community college, she would have gone. So it's opportunities for people who need it. And especially after the last year that we've been through, now is the time. So, all right. Well, it looks like we're on the right track. Stephanie, I know you've got to go pick up a child, but thank you for speaking English so that we understand this. I know that, you know, Bernie Sanders obviously has Joe Biden's ear. It's apparent in how Biden has acted over the last 100 days. Do you still have Bernie's ear at all? Are you still involved in any way in trying to help them get through what we need to do?
Well, I think that, you know, he's as chairman of the budget committee now, he will be shepherding through, hopefully, another big package, probably in all likelihood through reconciliation. I'm not working closely with him or his staff at the moment, but I am working with a lot of other Senate and House offices.
Oh,
so I'm pretty involved in a variety of different things right now, working on legislation with other offices.
Good.
Well, he knows I'm there if and when he needs me, he knows that.
Well, that makes me very happy. Stephanie Kelton, everyone should read The Deficit Myth, now available as a paperback. Follow Stephanie Kelton on Twitter. And thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. I so appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I turned down the wrong thing. Thanks to Stephanie Kelton. And you have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you Monday, everybody. Bye. Let's do this.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden went to Lake Charles, Louisiana, Thursday to make a public pitch in support of his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan, using a 70-year-old bridge as a backdrop. Biden has proposed paying for his plan by raising taxes on wealthy individuals and corporations, rejecting the conservative argument that lowering their taxes boosts economic growth. Biden has invited Republicans to discuss his plan and their $568 billion counterproposal.
I'm willing to hear ideas from both sides. I'm meeting with my Republican friends up in the Congress to see, number one, how much they're willing to go for, what they think of the priorities, and what compromises mean. Man, I'm ready to compromise. What I'm not ready to do, I'm not ready to do nothing.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said Republicans would rather pay for infrastructure with user fees, and added,
100% of my focus is on stopping this new administration.
Yeah, we know that obstructionist tactic, Mitch. You've done it before. In a perplexing move, the Federal Election Commission announced Thursday that it had dropped a case of possible campaign finance violations by the former guy's 2016 campaign related to that $130,000 hush payment made to porn star Stormy Daniels. Trump's former personal lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen paid Daniels right before the election to keep her from disclosing a sexual encounter with Trump. The payment was not reported in campaign filings. Cohen, who said Trump ordered the payments to Daniels and another woman, went to jail in 2018 for violating campaign finance laws and other charges. The FEC deadlocked on whether or not to investigate. Two Republican commissioners voted to drop the issue at a closed-door meeting in February. Two Democratic commissioners voted to pursue it. A third Republican recused himself, and the third Democrat on the commission was inexplicably absent. Seriously? This makes no sense. The FEC at least did the right thing on Thursday with a rare unanimous 6-0 vote to ban a shady fundraising tactic used by the Trump campaign at the end of the 2020 race. The New York Times reported last month about the scam in which the campaign sent out fundraising solicitations that defaulted to authorized monthly and often weekly recurring donations. Some of the solicitations also used pre-checked boxes to double the amount of the donation. This resulted in a flood of fraud complaints and a mind-blowing $122.7 million in refunds to duped online donors. Now, the FEC can make recommendations, but has no power to mandate this new rule. Within hours of their announcement on Thursday, Senator Amy Klobuchar, who chairs the Senate Rules Committee, said that she'd introduce legislation to bar campaigns from using those pre-checked recurring donation boxes. Well, according to the latest vaccination models, about 185 million Americans could be fully vaccinated by September. That's roughly 88% of the adult population. But experts say it's a race against time to fend off a winter surge as virus variants like the one driving the crisis in India become more prominent. Booster shots may also be needed in the coming months to keep up immunity. And while we may be doing well here in the States, India reported 414,188 new cases on Thursday, a new daily high. Brazil has topped 15 million cases already. But again, there is some hope on the horizon after the government announced it would buy an extra 100 million Pfizer vaccine doses. In voter suppression news, following the lead of Georgia, Florida and Texas have joined the list of states enacting controversial voter suppression laws based on the former guy's false claims of voter fraud in the 2020 elections. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill Thursday that includes stricter voter ID requirements for voting by mail, limits on who can pick up and return a voter's ballot, a ban on private funding for elections, and stricter Dropbox rules. The new law was hit with at least two immediate legal challenges from activist groups, including the League of Women Voters, the Black Voters Matter Fund, and the Florida Alliance for Retired Americans. To add a little more of the ick factor involved, the DeSantis' signing event was broadcast exclusively by Fox Not News. Other journalists weren't even allowed inside, and the signing was broadcast as a Fox and Friends exclusive, prompting condemnation from other news outlets and journalism groups. And then the Texas House of Representatives moved a bill forward that would add new voting restrictions and penalties. It still needs to bounce around the state house and Senate before final votes, but business groups and voting rights organizations are ready for a fight if that one becomes law. And not to be outdone by Florida and Texas, the Republicans' latest attack on voting rights seems to be coming from Ohio, where state lawmakers introduced their first major voter suppression legislation on Thursday. Like the bill signed into law in Georgia and Florida, Ohio's HB 294 targets absentee voting and ballot drop boxes. Watch out for this trend to continue nationally. A sixth grade girl brought a gun to her Idaho middle school, where she shot and wounded two students and a custodian before she was finally disarmed by a teacher on Thursday. The girl pulled the handgun from her backpack and fired multiple rounds inside and outside Rigby Middle School in the very small city town of Rigby, about 95 miles southwest of Yellowstone National Park. A female teacher disarmed the girl and held her until police arrived and took her into custody. Authorities say they're investigating the motive for the attack and where the girl got the gun. There was another incident, this one in Columbia, South Carolina, where a Fort Jackson trainee is in custody after allegedly hijacking a school bus full of students on its way to an elementary school. According to video and the sheriff, the suspect boarded the bus, held a rifle to the driver, and told him to drive to the next town. There were 18 children on board, along with the driver. Luckily, no one was hurt. The suspect faces kidnapping, armed robbery, carjacking, and other charges. And finally, listen up. About 940,000 Americans enrolled in Affordable Care Act health insurance coverage during the first 10 weeks of the Biden administration's special open enrollment period that started on February 15th. Nearly half of those people signed up for Obamacare coverage in April after Congress approved the latest relief package, which added billions of dollars to boost health insurance subsidies. 4 million uninsured Americans now could qualify for plans that wouldn't require them to pay any premium at all. This according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. And there's good news, too, for people who've had coverage through the Affordable Care Act. Log back in to healthcare.gov or your state exchange and go through the application process again, because most of us are eligible for much larger subsidies now. Save some money. That's what it's there for. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.